The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 13th of August, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Dr. Jonathan Forster, CEO of Cora Gold. C-O-R-A is a ticker there. And Jonathan discusses the further impressive high grades at the San Ancora prospect, which enhances the potential of a large-scale discovery in Mali. Also on the podcast, we've got Malky talking about the following stocks: Savannah Petroleum, SAVP, President Energy, PPC, Zenith Energy, ZEN, Genel Energy, GENL, Faro Petroleum, FPM, and Rock Rose Energy, RRE. I also have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs, which you can now see on our brand new homepage. Just go to voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dr. Jonathan Forster, Cora Gold CEO. And that's C-O-R-A is the ticker for Cora. John, thanks for joining me.
Great to talk to you again, Justin. Good morning.
Now, we're going to be discussing an RNS entitled Impressive High Grades at San Ancora Gold Discovery in a bit. Before we do that, John, for people new to the podcast or not familiar with the company, could you explain, and there's a subtle hint in the title, Cora Gold, but could you explain what you're about, please?
Certainly. Yes, Cora Gold. We were listed on AIM in October 2017. We raised funds to focus on our large gold exploration portfolio with permits in Mali in West Africa. So there are three key elements to our company. First of all, we have a highly experienced management team with a track record of making gold discoveries in Africa, many of which have become gold mines. Secondly, we have a large portfolio of gold exploration permits, of which the San Ancora project is the most advanced, and that has clear standalone resource potential. And then thirdly, we have a group of permits which include the Tekla Dugu and other drill-ready targets that lie within close relationship to existing gold plants. So any scale of economic discovery at these permits could take the company forward into cash flow in a relatively short space of time.
Yeah, like you say, you've got lots of targets there. Your lead target, as we're going to discuss today, is San Ancora, and you've done quite a few bits of drilling here, and there's results coming out. So let's go through the last set of results, and they're looking very impressive, aren't they?
It's the sort of thing as a geologist I love to see. It helps me get up out of bed every morning. It keeps me excited. So these drill results are primarily from a zone that we call Target 1 at San Ancora, where we actually announced the first discovery there, a new discovery, back in January. So it's located about 7 kilometers to the north of the main zone of mineralization. But that discovery we just described back in January came from some drilling we did on very wide space drill fences, about 320 meters apart. Mm-hmm. So we've done some infill drilling there, but still relatively wide space. So we're talking about 160 meters apart. So if you think what that is, that's still quite a long way between the drill holes. But importantly, we also stepped out to the north of that discovery, a further 800 meters, albeit only on two new drill fences, but to intercept on one of them 52 meters at 2.4 grams and on the other about 32 meters at 3.5 grams is impressive. And I think any explorationist, it would get them up and out of bed easily.
Yeah, well, just John, can you just explain, for people who are not familiar with the grades and stuff, I mean, you're a geologist and you know instantly what a good grade is, but what is the sort of benchmark you're looking for if there is one?
Tends to be down to size and width of what you're drilling. For example, if you're drilling a narrow structure, something 2 or 3 meters that you might mine from underground, then you're looking at grades you might want in the order of 8 grams per ton or more. And remember, what, 1 gram of gold is worth probably about $40 a ton. So if you've got eight, you're talking about $300 a ton and probably cost you, oh, I don't know, maybe half of that to mine it. But what we're looking at are open pit. And in those where you're looking at mineable widths of maybe 15 to 20 meters or more, the operating costs are much lower. And so you're really looking at two grams or above to make really impressive gold mines, some world-class gold mines. And that's, you know, two grams is what, $80. And again, you'd probably mine that and process it for less than half that cost.
Yeah.
So when you get intercepts of 2 grams or more, you know that you're into juicy zones.
Okay, excellent stuff. So at the moment, you're saying that Sankoro, from the evidence and the drill results you've received, is potentially be a standalone mine. I mean, you seem very confident about that, but you're not saying definitively it is. When do you think you will know if it is then?
I mean, exploration, there's always step-by-step approach. So what, for us, our next... the next target or the next task for us, both here, and we shouldn't forget our Tekeledugu project close to the hummingbird plant at Yamfalila. So both of them, the next step is to start doing the drilling on a close enough spaced picture that enables us to have much greater confidence in both the widths and the grades that we're looking at. Mm-hmm. So for us, that means probably having to drill between probably down to ultimately 40-meter drill fences over the large distances that we have. So our next step then is to go back and start doing that infill drilling. And that can take, 6 to 12 months for the first round of drilling to come up with resources. And it's after that that you start to build resources that you can start doing your desk studies regarding the sort of operational aspects and what a mine might actually look like.
Yeah, okay. And you're saying here the grades are looking very good, but there's also, of course, the strike length. And you're saying now is extended to approximately 8 kilometres, indicating its large-scale potential. Can this get bigger?
Yeah, I mean, this gold system is very large. We've so far indicated through the drill, albeit on some wide space fences, as we've been talking about, but we've indicated that the structure continues for about 8 kilometres or more. Albeit, you know, we have to remember it's not big, wide, high-grade structures all the way. It does pinch and swell, but that's the nature of these things. But that is still only probably about 30% of the total potential of these structures. So the ability to keep growing it is really there. And I suppose our decision is, when do we stop extending the scale of it and when do we start really focusing on developing resources? Yeah. So that's something that we will be discussing over this wet season, which gives us the time to step back
and
evaluate.
Sorry, it is the wet season, like you say. How long does it last, and is that what you're doing right now, just discussing the project going forward?
No, exactly that. You know, it's the wet season started about the middle of July. It will go on for about 3 months or so. And so that gives us an opportunity to really collate all that data we've collected, evaluate, and plan for the next season, which we'd hope that we'd be back on the ground sometime in October. And so we're very generous. We let our geologists get off for a bit of a leave break as well.
Yeah.
So before we get them back out there and the drill turning again.
Yeah, you're a geologist. You're very sort of understated. I like that a lot. But, you've done a lot of work in Africa, a lot of work with gold. How does this sort of, at the moment, at the stage it's at, how does this stack up against other projects you've worked on?
I've been very fortunate in that my team and myself, we have made discoveries. So I'm familiar with what is required. And I think the important thing is this continuity. So I am excited that, I have this sort of feeling that we're standing on something here that that again one day could become a mine. And you know, and I say it's not just San Ancora. I think this season we've had some excellent drill results from San Ancora, but also from that project Tekla Dugu next to the Hummingbird mine. So that also will be one of the focuses we have next season.
Yeah, and I suppose when you go to build a mine, of course, there's that decision process, because you have to have the resource there to justify the cost of a mine. But with Tekla Dugu, like you say, you maybe don't have to do that, because it's 10 kilometres down the road from you know, your major shareholder, Hummingbird Resources mine in Yanfalila. So you could just, what would be the score there? Would you just, sort of get it up and track it off to that processing plant there? Is that the way it works?
Yeah, obviously we've not had any discussions whatsoever regarding how things might develop there. We're still waiting on drill results. We completed a round of drilling there back in June, July. So we're waiting on those drill results. But if those results continue to give encouragement, then I think the next steps there is we'd continue to do the infill drilling. And yes, given that you're 10 kilometres from an existing gold plant, it's so logical that in the end you develop just the open pits and you truck the ore straight to that existing gold plant. And then you sit down, you work out with Hummingbird how you share the proceeds.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. And just one final thing, taking a bit of a longer view here, so beyond the next drill season, what are your options? Like you say, is there the option of just seeing how big this discovery is, or do you head towards defining a JORC resource or whatever, and then go forward again to a scoping study, or what's the deal?
Mm. Well, we certainly have as our objective the outline of resources under, as you say, JORC, so a regulated resource, and start to put all that in engineering infrastructure around it, start to do those studies towards how do you turn a resource into a gold mine. So as a company, we are committed to taking it along those steps towards mining. And the long term, we've got people on our board that can build mines. We've got contacts around the industry. At the moment, I'd say we have many options for what the final stage might look like.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, John, listen. Yeah, I know. Listen, I've checked out the board. I've written a blog about you. I mean, you are well connected in the guys like on the board, and people who have skin in the game there or owned stakes. They've done it before, and they've, you know, made a pretty penny in this very industry. So you are well connected. So, John, one final thing. For people listening right now who likes the sound of the progress you're making but are not following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Box and add you to their watch list, please.
Yep, certainly. So first of all, I'd say we have a management board that is very experienced in operating in Africa. Been very successful in Africa, and don't forget in Mali in particular, where our exploration team has our senior geologists in Mali, and they've worked with me for over 15 to 20 years, so we're very familiar with operating in that country. Secondly, we have an exploration portfolio that now has two principal discoveries at San Ancora, with that standalone mine potential, and at Tekla Dugu, which has those close ties to Hummingbird. And then thirdly, as we just mentioned, we have this strong shareholder list with experienced individuals behind us. And you know, don't forget, Hummingbird Resources is our principal shareholder with some 34%. Mm-hmm. So all in all, I think we're a very well-balanced company with that great potential moving forward.
Marvellous stuff. John, good to chat to you. Hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Malky, Oil and Gas Sector Specialist. You all right, Malky?
I'm very well, thanks, Justin. And you?
Yeah, good. Pretty odd, isn't it? How the weather... It's almost... I tweeted yesterday. Do you remember the heat wave I tweeted? Because it's like... It seems like ages ago now, doesn't it? All of a sudden, a couple of days of coldness and a bit of dreariness. And it's like... it's like a, you know, different year.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. You forget all about it, isn't it? Yeah. Grass is getting green again and all sorts of things.
Anyway, let's go on to the oil and gas sector. What news have you got? Which companies are you talking about, Malky?
Well, I've got a few bits and pieces. One or two are carrying on from companies I've spoken to recently. Mm-hmm. There are one or two, you know, outstanding sort of value anomalies, I would say. I mentioned once or twice recently, but they still come through. Mm-hmm. And I suppose right at the top of that list is Savannah Petroleum. I noticed you had a chat with Andrew Knott the other day.
Yeah.
It really hasn't put any value in for the success it's been happening. Just to remind people, Savannah is drilling exploration wells in Niger in Africa, and also has an acquisition they're just about to complete in Nigeria. I'll come back to that in a minute. But they were, you know, they're very early days. They went into Niger and they've had an enormous amount of success already. The first three wells, back-to-back wells, were all successes, all found oil. And I suppose one of the things that people were concerned about with Savannah was that Niger would be a difficult place to produce and sell the oil. It's a long way to export routes, and there's pipelines needed and everything else. But the Savannah announced last week that good news on more than one front, actually. I mean, they've signed an MOU with the Niger government to sell their oil that they discovered into the domestic refinery. Now, that's remarkably good news, because this early production system, which Andrew Knott has talked to you about and me, is going to get up and running, you know, very quickly indeed. Obviously, the infrastructure is already there, and it's part owned by the government and CNPC and so on. And so it shows that the Niger government have given them massive support in order to make this happen. And so, you know, whereas people might have thought that drilling for oil in Niger, you know, it might not have been successful, and if it had been, it would have been stranded, is exactly the reverse of the case. I would expect, we might even get some oil into the marketplace by the end of the year, but certainly they're not going to build it up very quickly. They'll make sure they get it right, and they'll just add in the production. But it means that they'll get cash flow way sooner than people had thought, and of course, the drilling should be able to continue faster. They've got options on a lot of rigs for wells to come up, and therefore, you know, there was a well drilling at the moment, which, if that was successful, that would add into the process as well. So the bottom line is that Niger has already been successful. It's very, very attractive on economics onshore in Niger. The government want them to sell it. They're going to get the opportunity to go through the pipeline into the refinery. And that is extremely good news for them. So the other thing that people might have been concerned about is that the Seven Energy acquisition in Nigeria, which is a real game changer for Savannah, hasn't yet completed. And I think there are people who feel that this is having some difficulty and won't complete. I've spoken to Andrew about it a number of times. You know, it's an immensely complicated piece of legal stuff, with a number of different parties having to get their signatures on the process. He is absolutely convinced that it'll complete in the next quarter, and I believe him. And therefore, you know, I just think that, you know, it's one of those things that the Savannah share price has just not partaken of the rise that it should have done, given the amount of success they've had. Yeah, with the Seven Energy acquisition completed, that'll give them a very profitable cash flow from Nigeria, with the ability to increase the upside on further pipelines and clients, and the midstream business, which is very profitable. And in Niger, you know, if they keep drilling successful wells, and they'll be selling it by the end of the year, by the end of next year, it'll be coming in leaps and bounds. So I think Savannah has just been ignored by the marketplace, and it shouldn't have been.
Yeah, definitely. It just seemed to be that when it went through that sort of fundraising, like I said, that acquisition, it does seem to have taken a bit of momentum out of the share price. But, you know, only a matter of time before it starts to gain traction again. Like I say, 3 out of 3 is an amazing success. And like I said, cash flow, obviously, they're fast-tracking that. So, yeah, it'll start gaining traction soon, won't it?
I'm sure it will. It's only a question of the market understanding the process. And just let's get that 7 Energy deal completed as well. So, you know, I'm very positive.
Yeah, cool. And what else, Marky?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the next one is another one I've mentioned a number of times in the past. And this one is also has just not been understood by the market. And it's President Energy, yeah. Run by Peter Levine of Imperial fame. That we're obviously we're in Argentina here, and they announced last week that that things in Puerto Flores, the acquisition they made from Chevron, is going great guns. They've got 3 new wells they've announced there, which are going to be drilled in the third quarter. Production is going remarkably well there. They're already producing, and the company's producing 2,700 barrels a day. I would expect the 3 new wells to deliver a minimum of 600 barrels a day. I mean, that's a base case basis with significant upside. With these new wells offsetting the natural decline, you know, I can see 3,700 to 4,000 barrels a day for this company, which would be huge incremental cash flow. Which at the moment is what $2.3 million a month. Could be $3 million a month. Elsewhere, they've got exciting stuff as well. They've got this Estancia Vieja gas discovery. Now, this is a gas discovery which, for the time being, is probably going to be able to be really valuable to them because they'll be able to use the gas and they're shipping in power generation units, and they'll generate enough power for the whole of all of their wells, and that would be extremely good news for them. There's also the potential at some stage to export gas into the grid, which would be even more substantial savings, obviously across the board for the company thanks to this gas. They've still got Presto Guardian, which is producing, you know, really, you know, the sort of bread and butter stuff for the company. And I think that, you know, with potentially some more deals for Peter Levine to do in Argentina, I think that there's a huge amount of upside. This stock is also, you know, trading around the level that it raised money at nearly a year ago, which was at 10p. And since then, they've added a huge amount of daily production, significant cash flow, very high margin. You know, it's absolute peach of a stock, this one. Market still hasn't understood it.
Yeah, so how much do you think they're producing a month at the moment?
$2.3 million.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
So, you know, the drilling program is fully funded, yeah. With lots of upside from, you know, exploration wells, workovers and so on. So, you know, it's in a very strong position.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, PPC, that is Present Energy. What's next, Malky?
Okay, just briefly run through one or two others. I noticed an announcement from Zenith Energy this morning. This is Azerbaijan, and, you know, there have been a lot of retail players in this one. You know, very patient investors they've been. It looks like we're now about to have some real action in the Zardab field in Azerbaijan, because, you know, all sorts of things are happening. They've had the second geological study on the Zardab field, which confirms the potential. This has got a huge CPR value. Shares are trading at a massive discount to assets, and they've got a lot of exciting things coming up. They've got drilling opportunities. They've got a major new rig, which is the biggest and most powerful they can have in country, arriving next month, and a workover rig. I expect them to go straight into some of the really big opportunities, but they've also got, you know, a number of things to offset as well. So, you know, Zenith is showing quite a, you know, a, a, they're really going to have a go. They've hired three new geologists. They've got a new operations guy starting any minute now. You know, if those people who've been patient with Zenith should certainly be patient now, because one way or the other, we're going to find out just how much they can get out of this Azerbaijan acreage, which does look highly promising.
Yeah, so do you know what? I've lost the story halfway through because Andrea came on a couple of times when they first launched, listed, and he did have this target in mind. I think it was 1,000 barrels of oil by March, and I assume they missed that, didn't they? So is that what happened? Is that why the share price?
Well, no, they've still got. I think they've announced today that they've got something like, a pretty decent cash flow. Coming in, I mean, yeah, given the current oil price and what they're producing, I think it's what they're getting, half a million. I think they said today $490,000dollars last month for its acreage, and of course the target is for the end of the year, as far as I'm aware. So the crucial time of developing this work program. They're adding a lot of the ESPs, the pumps, the submersible pumps into the existing wells. So, they've got a chance here that they could be making, decent money per month, and with, potentially significant upside. And, as I say, for a company of its size, it's got an amazing portfolio and size of portfolio. So, it's I've been out there, and it's most interesting. And a lot of these workover wells have been left in very poor condition, and with the previous small kit, it was struggling. Now they've rented and hired this really powerful piece of equipment. I should think that things could change in the next quarter quite substantially for this company.
Yeah, $490,000. Where was it? For the oil production during the month of July, so that's the that's the revenue there. Okay, yeah. All right, yeah. And they're only they're 8 million market cap, so there is a small company there. So
it's a very small company for the amount of potential in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Zen. Okay, anything else, Marky?
Just briefly, we had announcements last week from Genel, which I mentioned last week. Really super set of interim figures, pushed the share price up there. This went into the bucket list, if you remember, quite recently, because I think things are looking so much better at Genel. It's not true. They've got super production figures. The Peshkabir wells are now producing, and that's only with the first two. They've got 35,000 barrels a day. They've got two more testing imminently. I would expect that to go higher. This company has come from significant debt and will be in net cash by the end of this year, which is a very important thing to remember, and therefore, how profitable it is at the moment. they've got these gas fields, Bina Bawi and Miran, but they've got an oil layer on top, and I think that there's no doubt that when they develop the Bina Bawi oil, they've got a number of wells to drill there, there'll be plenty of upside as well. So, as I mentioned last week, things looking very well at Genel. And also, Faro Petroleum announced a trading update last week, and things going really well at Faro. They're now producing over 15,000 barrels a day, but they had the drilling success at Iris Hades. They've got, this is probably the best company in the whole sector in terms of really long-term exploration success. They've got several exploration wells coming up again. They've got cash of $84 million in the business. This is the sort of Rolls Royce of E&P companies, has been for a long time. When they make a big discovery, they farm out a little bit of it in order, to drill more. And they're extremely well run. So Faro is good. And just briefly wanted to mention Rock Rose Energy, which you and I have talked about before. I'll probably be able to talk about more in the next day or two. I've got a call into Andrew Austin at Rock Rose today. But the bottom line is that they announced yet another deal on Friday which is they're taking a 20.43% stake in the Arran development in the North Sea, which comes on stream at the end of 2021. As I say, I wouldn't mind a bit more detail. So I'm going to get that from Andrew today. But either way, it looks like another cracking deal for this company. Shares are moving up again. I'm a real fan of the team, and I think they'll do well.
Yeah, do you know what? I've noticed a lot more people talking about Rockrose Energy on social media at the moment. So it is obviously getting some traction with this kind of this news flow. So, yeah, very interesting. Marvellous stuff. Anything else, Marky?
No, I think that's it. There's lots going on, as usual, but I'll restrict it to that. And I'll come back to you next week on Rockrose when I've spoken to Andrew Austin.
Marvellous stuff. Yeah, chat next week, Marky.
Okay, thanks very much.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Eris Resources, E-R-I-S. Couldn't think of the ticker name then. At four, Botswana Diamonds, B-O-D, BOD. At three, Predator Oil and Gas, P-R-D. I've written a blog on those. Have a read. Why not? If you can read, of course. I'm not saying you can't. Some people can't. Some people don't want to read. Mate Steve, for example, I think he's read half a book his entire life. At two, Rehobold Resources, RBD. And number one most followed company is Rockrose Energy, which, of course, Malky talked about in the podcast earlier. Okay, top five most liked RNSs come from the following companies. At five, Greatland Gold. Greatland launched its third exploration program. At four, Sound Energy, TE9 rig mobilization. At three, Echo Energy, initial well testing completion at ELM 1004. At two, Rehobold Resources, update on Rehobold California. Number one is United Oil and Gas, delivery of 3D seismic for Jamaica license, which was very positive news. It said initial observations look very good, and yet the share price always seems to go down on good news with United Oil and Gas. Very frustrating. I think maybe a seller in there, but of course, as with all sellers, they're not there forever. And it also, you know, gives people an opportunity to get in, I think, at a decent sort of valuation, which I think they more than are. If you look at all the licenses they have, 9 licenses. Jamaica's just one of them, high impact. And I think that's worth net to United Oil and Gas around 87 million. And yet Coulter's coming up, the appraisal well. And that's worth about 8.8 pence on its own. At the moment, they are 4 pence? So lots of upside there, but like I said, very frustrating. The SP, the share price goes down on positive news, which very annoying. I'm a holder, as you probably tell. Otherwise, I wouldn't be that frustrated. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.